Well, hello everyone, this is Joe, KA9OPL, Kilo Alpha 9, Oscar, Papa Lima, and I'm located in the state of Indiana. I am doing this tutorial, sort of informational. It's going to be not exactly a tutorial because it's going to focus mostly on the TYT MD380 and 390 radios from an accessibility standpoint. Anyone could probably make use of the information here. The target audience, though, really is anyone who's vision impaired, would like some guidance on how to use this radio and how they can make it work better. In the outset, I'd like to say that I am not going to give any real discussion of the TY Tools, T-O-O-L-Z, firmware, which is a modified firmware. It is not approved by TYT, so if you do install it, you void your warranty. And as long as nothing really goes wrong, you could always uninstall it if you feel that there's something else going wrong with the radio. The problem is normally if that happens, if something goes wrong, you may not be able to uninstall it. So then your radio is not under warranty if it needs service. Having said that, it's up to every individual how they want to deal with that situation. I chose not to do it. I may do it at some point, but I'm a software systems programmer by profession, and so I'm quite used to working with the computer. So I really didn't have a problem trying to learn how to manipulate everything I needed through the software and then use the radio after it's programmed. The software is fairly accessible to a screen reader, and that's the other consideration. Sometimes you really can't operate that way. If you have a radio and software which are not screen reader accessible, for those who are blind and use screen readers, you kind of get yourself painted in a corner, so to speak. In this case, the software is reasonably accessible, and there's also another program called the Code Plug Editor, which is a freeware program that you can use as an adjunct to help you do some adjusting to an existing code plug. Now, let me start by giving you an overview of the terminology. The TYT MD380 and 390 radios, of course, are designed to work with FM and DMR. DMR, which stands for Digital Mobile Radio, originated in the commercial sector. It has caught on as one of the digital voice modes that is now being utilized as well in amateur radio. Three major voice modes are in use right now: DMR, D-Star, and C4FM Fusion, which is the Yaesu proprietary product. So in this particular session, I'm going to really concentrate on DMR and on the TYT radios. To begin with, let's talk a little bit about DMR and some of its terminology, the things that you'll encounter as you work with it. DMR comes from, as I said, the commercial side, and as such, much of the way things are implemented makes it more centrally controlled, although with the introduction of the Brandmeister network, it has loosened up considerably, and amateur radio involvement in DMR has grown geometrically since then because of the fact that it's much more of a free, less rigid system now. Some of the terminology that's used in DMR includes the idea of talk groups. A talk group is generally designated by a numeric value, and it's sort of a designator that separates conversations into channels, or in some places you call them rooms or compartments. It allows you to set up kind of like party lines where anyone who's talking on that particular talk group, their conversation is receivable or can be monitored by anyone who's also connected to that talk group. There are two ways basically you connect to talk groups. One is by way of repeaters, and the other is by way of what's called a hotspot. A hotspot is essentially a mini or micro, if you will, repeater. Basically, it's something that you operate in the privacy of your own home or your vehicle. Some folks do that. What it is a very, very small transceiver that is connected by way of software to the internet, and it connects you to the talk groups and reflectors that are used in other digital modes. There are reflectors. D-Star and Fusion use reflectors. Fusion also uses Wires X. So in my case, I use both. I have a couple of repeaters in the area that I can use for D-Star as well as DMR. And there's a Fusion repeater coming in that I will also have access to. But I also use an OpenSpot by Shark RF, which is one of these micro repeaters that I just mentioned. The other thing I also have is a DV4 Mini, which is another small the unit. The difference between those two units is that the OpenSpot is a standalone, very small unit that is connected by way of RJ45 standard cable directly to the router. So it connects to the internet directly by way of router. It is not wireless, but it does not require a computer. It has its built-in processor. So then the only thing you need in addition to that is a radio, and you need a computer to program it, to set it up. Once it's set up, though, you don't need anything but the radio. The DV4 Mini, on the other hand, is a very small USB stick. Looks like a flash drive with an antenna on the end of it because it's a transceiver, so it has a small UHF 70 centimeter antenna on the one that I have. I think there is a 2 meter version as well. And it connects to a computer, could be laptop or a desktop, it could be a Raspberry Pi, whatever your implementation. And it then would interface to the internet by way of the computer that it's connected to, and that computer could be wireless or could be direct connected to a router. And then there is accompanying software which you use to program and to set the frequency and the reflectors and so on, and your call sign, your DMR subscriber ID, which I'll talk about in a minute. So that's an overview of kind of the way you access the digital modes, and this is usable in the three digital modes that I've mentioned. There are two other digital modes that are being used, but I think not very much in amateur radio. There's the P25 mode, which is used a lot in emergency communications and in public service. And then there's the NXDN, which is one of the newer digital modes that's being used. But by and large, in terms of digital voice modes, D-Star, DMR, and C4FM Fusion are the modes that are being used in amateur radio. As of this weekend, I have radio for all three of these modes. Until then, I had two. I had D-Star and DMR. And I was doing some cross mode from the using the OpenSpot, which it has the capability of Fusion to DMR and DMR to Fusion cross mode. But now I just purchased a little Fusion handheld, a Yaesu. The only downside, in my opinion, of the Fusion implementation is that Yaesu is the only game in town if you want a radio. Not that there's anything wrong with Yaesu, but cornering the market means they have the ability to make their equipment as good or not as good as they want to, and if people want to operate in that mode, then they don't have much of a choice. Yaesu radios are not, in general, particularly accessible to the blind. In the case of the one I bought, which is the FT70DR, a lot of the radio is somewhat accessible, but there's no speech output, so a lot of the menus, if you have to read them, you're out of luck. But the software, on the other hand, is very usable with the JAWS screen reader, which is the screen reader I'm using. So I can program the radio that way, and once it's programmed, then I can utilize it. I've just started doing that. I've got a few channels in it. Back to the DMR side of things. The concept of talk groups I mentioned, DMR utilizes channels, contacts, talk groups, and zones. Those are the major building blocks of something called a code plug. That's a strange sort of term. A code plug is nothing but a large package of settings which define everything in a radio. So a typical DMR radio will have a group of contacts, maybe thousands of them. That is destinations, either talk groups or actual individual call signs, or in this case, subscriber IDs. Then there are channels, which are the combinations of the destination, the power level that you're going to use if your radio is selectable, the frequency, the color code. And what is a color code? Well, a color code is something similar to what we are familiar with in the FM side of things, of a tone, like a CTCSS or a DCS tone. They're called color codes. There are 16 color codes available in DMR. In addition, the settings that make up a channel, of course, I said frequency, color code, power level, squelch control. There's something called talk around, and what that means is that you can talk simplex regardless. There are a lot of settings that I'm not going to try to cover in this particular session. Nevertheless, so a code plug, as I said, is a package of all these things. And then there are things called zones. And what a zone is a group of channels. So a channel, as I said, composed of all these settings, one of the most important parts of which, of course, is the destination, which in many cases is going to be a talk group. And there are different talk groups that address different, say, geographical areas, cities, states, countries, or different parts of interest in the ham radio hobby. For example, the Handy Ham group has its own talk group, not a very active one at the moment. There are some rather standardized ones. Something called TAC310 is one of the very, very busy talk groups if you want to have a conversation with somebody. Get your radio set on TAC310 and it'll be busy almost 24/7. TAC311 is another one. There's Worldwide. There's something called North America. And then there's each of the states pretty much have their own talk groups available. I'm in Indiana, we've got one. And just about every state, as far as I know, has one. And those talk groups map that to numbers. And most code plugs, if you get one from somewhere, will have all those talk groups in there. Brandmeister, which is one of the major players now in terms of the network, they have lists of all these talk groups that you can get on the Brandmeister online network. And I've got a digital page that goes along with this discussion here that you can refer to get access to some of the Brandmeister information, some of the Motorola, which also has a lot to do with the commercial side of DMR. And I also have references in there to D-Star and Fusion. Now, the code plug is something that you can either build from scratch, which most people don't do. There are a lot of repositories out on the internet of places you can get code plugs. Hoosier DMR, which is in my area here in Indiana, has a repository. I have included two code plugs up on my digital page, which are copies of the code plug that I use. It won't be some of it won't benefit you if it's you're not in Indiana. However, the one zone in the code plug that will benefit you if you happen to have a OpenSpot or a DB4 Mini, and really probably any hotspot, the zone 4 of my code plug is something that you can pretty well use all of. And in any case, you could start with that code plug and add, subtract, multiply, divide, and play around with it and use it as a starting point to make your own. A little bit easier to have something to start with, and you could see the way a code plug works, and then from there, fashion it to your own needs. So that's a little bit of basic information about DMR, how it works. As I said, there are repeaters, and there are hotspots. Those are the main ways that you're going to access any of the digital modes. I will go demonstrate a little bit later using the OpenSpot and see if we can make a contact on DMR, which I'm certain we can. I want to move into a discussion now of actually the radio itself. I'm holding in my hand a MD390, and the 380 is a similar, it's the smaller version. And most things about the two radios are the same, except that the 390 has a GPS, which I do not use, And it's a ruggedized model. It is a pretty solid, rugged model, although some of these Chinese radios, they are built on a budget to keep the price down, and sometimes they fail. And so do other radios, so to be fair, but I've heard a little bit more of 380s and 390s sometimes failing mysteriously, and sometimes they fail because people are playing with code plugs and things and firmware, and you can mess up the computer inside your radio if you're not careful. And while it's in my mind, I am going to give you a very important tip right now. Please, please pay attention to it. If you get to the point where you're working with your radio and you're going to program it yourself, using a computer, of course, always, when you connect it, before you try to write to it, try to read. Even if, okay, you've worked on your code plug and all the data's in a file on your computer, and you're like, well, I don't want to read my radio because I want to write from the code plug. Well, read it, because at least in my system, the first attempt I make to read fails. And I mean, it does it every time. If I read it a second time, just read it, it succeeds, and it always does succeed. Once you've gotten the communication to work, then you're pretty well guaranteed that you're not going to have a failure on the writing. If you fail in the middle of a write, you really can get your radio into a non-usable and maybe not even repairable state. If you read first, then you can be assured that once you get it to read to completion with a successful result, you can then follow up by opening the file that you want to update from and then doing a write. Now, of course, you got to open the file so you can overlay what you read from the radio, because you don't want to just read back, write back what you just read. You want to open, read. Then you want to do an open on your file that contains the information that you want to update from, and then you can do a write, and then everything's good. Having said all that, let's look at the physical radio itself. The physical radio, I've got a 390. The 380, the biggest difference in, other than the slightly the size and the weight, and the sturdiness, they're both reasonably sturdy radios. The 390 is rated at IP67, I think, so it's ruggedized, supposed to be waterproof. I'm not going to test it. The right side, going down the right side of the radio, is where the jacks and connectors are, and on the 380, they're covered by these rubber covers. On the 390, there is a screw-on cover, and you need to use, I use a penny. You stick it into the screw, you turn the screw, which I've just done, you loosen carefully until it comes off the radio. After it comes off the radio, what you've got revealed is simply two jacks, which is the microphone speaker jack, you know, for a headset. That's what's under that. The radio itself, to charge it, it has a drop-in charger. The contacts are on the back of the battery, and so on. The radio comes with a charger. It comes with, well, the 390 comes with two antennas, a very long, flexible antenna. Reminds you of a sort of a very thin coat hanger almost, in the fact that it's flat. You could bend it and it'll spring back. and a short antenna. I think the 380 only comes with one antenna. Looking at the radio, on the top of the radio, at the left side, you have an SMA jack for the antenna. In the middle, you have a 16-position channel selector. And the channel selector has beginning and end points. It will stop at each end. So you never can get lost in that respect. You can count, and it has little, you know, detents. It'll stop in each click from channel 1, 2, 3, and so on. That's in the middle of the top. On the right side of the top, you have the on-off volume control. Now let's turn to the left side of the radio. You have two small buttons on the top, one on the top and then one halfway down, and in the middle between those two buttons is a larger push-to-talk button. The two side buttons that surround the push-to-talk button are programmable buttons. The top one is button one, the bottom one is button two. So you basically, on the going from the top down, you have button one, you have the larger push-to-talk, and button two. The push-to-talk is more of a textured button. The two small buttons for the programmable are more rubberized, softer buttons. Now, turning back to the front of the radio, if you lay it face down, face up on the table or desk or wherever surface you have, so that the battery and belt clip, if the belt clip's attached, are laying down on the surface. With the radio face up, then, going from the top down, the top of the radio, you have the speaker grill. Also is in there is the microphone. Below the speaker grill, which takes up about a third of the radio, the next third is the display. Below the display is the keypad, the button pad. The button pad you're not going to use much, at least I don't. If you choose to try to do that, you can. As I said, these radios were initially designed for commercial use, and in commercial use, they basically are programmed for a fleet, and they are actually locked so that out in the field, the folks using them cannot reprogram them. They just can't do anything with them except change the channels. I pretty much use mine that way, except that I change zones and channels. And since you have 16 channels per zone, I don't know if you're limited. There's 1,000 channels, I believe, in the radio, so do the math. But if you could have lots of zones if you wanted to. You really don't need them. I got four, and that's plenty for me. I mostly use the zones that work with my open spot, or the channels, really. I use one zone primarily. Back to the face of the radio, the keypad, on the top row of the keypad is the menu type row. So the top left key is the menu button. Going to the right of that is the up, followed by the down, followed by the exit. So across the top, menu, up, down, exit. Going down, the next and really remaining groups of keys are the number pad, but the number pad is a little bit non-standard. It's like this many other Chinese, and I thought it was only the Chinese until I got my Yaesu radio and found out that the keypad on my radio is even more weird. But anyway, the way this works, if you go to the second row, you start with, go on the left side, you have key one, then two, then three, and then going to the right of the three, you have one more row of keys, and that key is the star key, or the asterisk. The next row down, you have 4, 5, 6, and you have then to the right of that, you have 0. And then you have 7, 8, 9, and you have the pound key. So it is, it's almost, you know, the way I'm used to radios in the U.S., you usually have, you'll have four rows, but basically the bottom row is where you'll have star zero pound and maybe A, B, C, D. This radio does not have letters unless it, maybe that you can make them in other ways, I don't know. I don't use it that way. Going to the, I'm going to turn the radio over just so you know, the back of the radio has the belt clip, and I will warn you, if you go to install the belt clip, it's a little cumbersome because the screws are kind of covered up. You have to, there are holes in the belt clip, top of the belt clip itself. You have to stick the screwdriver through there, and then you have to get the screws in place, and it's a little bit difficult. I did it. Without sight, it's a little bit of a pain to do because the screws, you can't see to really position them, and there's not a lot of room to put your fingers in there to get them in. I managed to get it to work. It took me about a half an hour to put the doggone belt clip on. Now, the back of the radio primarily is the battery. At the bottom of the radio where the battery attaches, there's a little bit of a latch affair, and you really kind of have to play with it to get it to come open. I usually don't open it very often, but you can. And when you do, I just popped it open. You open the radio, and then the battery comes loose. And you can slide it out. When you get it slid back into place, well, you have to lift the belt clip in order to get the battery out. When you get it back in place, basically there's a little swinging latch that comes up from the bottom, and once you get the battery in place, you pop that latch in, and you could hear it probably snap into place. A little bit different, but it does. Once it's on, it's on. So you won't accidentally drop your battery out, but if you really want to take it out, you have to work at it. The radio comes with there's a charger with, you know, a wall wart kind of charger with a cable that plugs into a charging stand base. You have to line up, there's little slide slots along the sides of the battery that you have to carefully put in position to put it into the charging base. Once you get it in correctly, you'll know it. And then once you get it in place, you plug the charging cable into the base and then plug the base into the wall. Do not plug the charger in before you put the radio in place, because you could easily, in trying to position it, you could be shorting terminals, and you don't want to mess up the charger. Okay, let's look at the side. The side of the radio is the real key. That is the left side. The left side of the radio, as I said, has two programmable buttons. And in the middle is the push-to-talk. The programmable buttons are what make this radio accessible, at least accessible enough for me, because the two programmable buttons, each button has two functions. There's a short press function and a long press function. The way I have programmed mine, the top button on the short press is the monitor. You press and release it, it turns off the squelch, disables the squelch, and you can hear the sounds of, especially if you're on FM, you'll hear the sound of the background hiss. And you press it again, and it turns the squelch on again. That's my short press for the top button. My long press for the top button toggles between low and high power. Now, the bottom button, short press is set for scan, which I really don't use, but that's what it's set for, and I left it that way. The long press of the bottom button is the real key to making this radio work for me. And that is, I found a function called zone toggle. Zone toggle. And it's not really a toggle, but it's a zone advance button. You long press the bottom button, it will move to the next zone, and it will beep the number of times of what zone you're landing on. If you have four zones in your radio and you're in zone one and you press it, it'll beep twice. If you press and hold it again, it'll beep three times, and so on. And once it's done, it'll cycle back around. So you always know what zone you're in. And the channel knob on top says you only have 16 positions, and you can count them. So when you're all the way to the left, you're in channel 1. And you just keep turning it clockwise, and you'll go through all the channels. All you have to do is make a list of the channels you have in each of your zones, and you can go to wherever you want to go. So then the only controls you really have to use are your on-off and volume, your channel selector, and your zone programmed button, and you can pretty well operate the radio. You can't do all the good stuff that people might like to do from the keypad, but if you program your radio the way you really want it, you don't have to worry about all that. You can do all that work on the computer. I understand that not everybody's going to be as computer literate as I am, or, you know, they're maybe not as comfortable. But I use computers all day long, basically 7 days a week in the kind of work I do. So that works for me, but that's, to me, the easiest way. And if you have to get someone to help you do that, once it's programmed, then you can just operate the radio and enjoy it. Now, to give you a feel for what this is like, I'm not going to try to demonstrate the programming at all to you, but I will give you through the website, you can look on the digital page, and you can download my code plugs if you want them to use. I took my code plug and I made it non-personal, so I took out my information, and I also took the code plug and made a version that will load on a 380 and one that will load on an MD390. You cannot use the same code plug on the two radios. There's enough difference between them that if you try to load the MD390 code plug on your 380 software, it'll say wrong model. Well, as it turns out, that little code plug editor that I told you about, which I also have a link that you can download it, it's freeware. A gentleman in the UK wrote it, and it's available free. It will read and edit and write code plugs for either model, 380 or 390, and you can change the model of the code plug while you're editing it, and then save it, say, to a different name, and so then you could actually take a code plug and duplicate it. Got a friend who's got a 390 and they want to use your code plug and yours is a 380, you can change it and store it, which I have done for some of my ham buddies here in Columbus. And we've probably passed that code plug all over the area. And of course, now if you want to use it, you're welcome to take it, carve it up. If you want to, what I would do and what I did when I took the original Indiana code plug, store it somewhere safely under a different name and just keep it as a fallback in case you really get in and louse up the code plug so it doesn't work anymore and you can restore from it and then start over. So, having said those things, I'm going to turn this on so you can hear what the radio does, and I'm going to demonstrate a little bit here the use of the buttons. That is the ones that I use that I've talked about. So here's what it sounds like when you turn the power on. And there you go. It's a standard. It's funny, they got that sound from Motorola, I think, by the way. Chinese radios have a habit of doing stuff like that. Now I'm going to tune this back to channel one on my zone. I'm in zone four right now, which is the one that I normally use. Tune back to channel one, which happens to be an FM channel, and I'm going to short press my key number one so that you can hear what happens when it turns the squelch off. Okay, so you heard it, it makes some tones, and when the squelch is opened up, then you could hear the FM, standard FM noise. You will not hear that when it's in digital mode. Now, this channel happens to be set for high power. You can set all your channels for either high or low power in this radio in the programming. And I'm going to long press the upper button, which is the power. It changes the power, and I want to hear, you can hear what it does. It's on high power, and when I long press it, that's the low power sound. I'm going to press it to turn it back, and you'll hear the high power sound. It's a little higher, dee-dee, and it's a higher, and it's two tones. The other one is lower, and it's three tones. So high power is higher, low power is lower. So even though it's not really, really accessible, there are certain things like that that you can do. Now I'm going to show you that as I go to the on the bottom button, I'm not going to do the scan function. I'll take my word for that because I don't know what it's going to scan. But if I long press the bottom button, that's my zone toggle, and you'll hear what it does. I'm on the last zone. So now it should you should hear one beep as it goes to zone one. There you go. We're now in zone one. I'm gonna hold it in, long press it again. That means you hold it and you keep it there until it does something. Now I released it. Okay, that's zone two. As you can see. Now I know that channel 13 in this zone I just dialed to it is TAC 310. I don't know if I can hit the repeater from here. This zone 2 is the Shelbyville repeater. I did hit it. And you can hit it when you hit a connection that receives your signal properly, you get that short blip. But I want to show you what happens if you go to one that it can't hit. I'm going to try to do that on purpose. Let's see if I can do it here on zone three. Okay, it hit zone three too. Okay, now on that particular one on zone three, it did not make the connection, and you hear it's got a longer sound. So that's kind of interesting. So that tells you you do get some feedback. If it does not make a connection to where you're trying to go, it will make that lower sound that you just heard. I'm going to go to zone 4. Okay, now what I'm going to do, let's see, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I'm going to go to channel 12 here. And the way this works, the way I've got it set up, channel 6 in this zone is what I call the calling channel. That's the channel you operate from. The other channels, when you short press and release on the push to talk button, the open spot switches to that channel. That's just the way it works. So I'm going to do that. And this channel is called the parrot. And the parrot is what you use in DMR. For those who don't know, you can talk, you transmit, and it will repeat what you sound like, send it back to you so you know if you're making a connection. So I'm going to switch to the parrot channel by keying up on channel 12. Now, I'm going to go back to channel 6. And I am going to give a call. Okay, you could probably hear that. That was what it did. It takes a few seconds, but it repeated it back to me. So you know, I know that I transmitted through my open spot to that parrot frequency, and it came back, or the parrot talk group. I'm going to go to the Handy Ham talk group and switch to that, which is 31990 is the talk group number. And I'm going to switch to that. I don't know if there'll be anyone on there. Keyed up on it. I'm now going to go back to my talk channel. I'll just put out a quick call. If someone answers me, then they'll get on this demo. If they don't, then that's okay. Now, what I will do just for fun is I'll go to TAC 310. I'm not sure I'm going to make a contact, but you might get to hear some other conversations going on. Now I'll switch back to 6. Here we go. Okay, so that's a little bit of a demonstration of...
Bill, will you be 2FYF listening on 310?
Okay, there you go.
On 310?
There you go. You just heard somebody transmit on TAC 310. So I'm going to go in and switch back to... There we go. I'm going to try to get off of there. Kind of hard to. The one thing that you'll find out is if you do try to change talk groups, if you're on a busy talk group, you may have trouble changing, because while someone's talking, you are not going to transmit. The system will block you from transmitting. If you try, when you do transmit, you'll get that low tone that you heard earlier. So I think that's going to get us close to the end of this. It's getting probably a little bit long. I apologize for that, but I wanted to give you a little information. I will give you a quick discussion, just a small discussion about the open spot in particular, just to give you an idea what the open spot, how it works. You program it through a computer. Once you have it on your network, you actually get into your web browser, and your web browser, in this case, the best way to do it is with the Google Chrome web browser. It will not work with Internet Explorer. Works fairly well with screen readers. So it's not really a problem to program it. You do have to do some reading. They have a pretty good online manual. And you go to actually the address of your open spot is http://openspot, OPENSPOT. And when you get there, then you have to log into it and you start filling in all the different things. You know, you have to, for all the modes that you're going to use it with, you have frequencies that you'll fill in. You'll put in your call sign. For DMR, you'll put in your subscriber ID and lots of other things. I'm not going to get into details on that, but I just wanted you just to give you an idea. OpenSpot is easy to use once you set it up, and you can set it up. It's got profiles, what it calls profiles, and you can have different sets of values, or you know, groups of settings is the best way to describe it. And each group of settings can be for the various modes, and you can just switch between them using your radio, mind you. And that allows you to say, okay, I want to be on D-Star, and then later on, okay, I want to switch to DMR, or I want to switch to C4 FM Fusion. And you can just do it all without ever going back to the computer, which is very good. One final comment. I'll also invite you all to check out the rest of the page. If you're listening to this tutorial discussion, you probably have been to my digital voice page, or at least my MD380-390 tutorial page, which is also a page that comes off of the digital page. Encourage you to look at any of the information. Also, I invite you to get in touch with me if you would like to have any questions, comments, whatever. You could use my call, Kilo Alpha 9 Oscar Papa Lima at hotmail.com, hotmail.com. And I don't look at that mailing address all the time, but I do enough that I will get to your email. Last comment I will have, and it may have been something I should have stated right up front. If you do not have one, you need to get your subscriber ID, because you cannot get on the DMR network without one. It's a 7-digit ID. I give you the link to the registry that you have to go to sign up for one. You fill out the information they need and you'll get one, I don't know, in 1 to 3 days usually. It's new. They've changed it. It used to be DMR Mark, which is the Motorola Amateur Radio Club, were the ones that were doing it. Well, now there's a European registry that's handling these ID requests for, I believe, all the digital amateur modes. For D-Star, you need another you actually register your call sign, your regular FCC call sign, to be eligible to get on the gateway. You do not have to have registration if you're just going to operate in a local or simplex D-Star mode. But if you want to do worldwide communication, you have to get on the gateway. And to do that, you have to be registered. Or the system won't let you on the gateway. Same with DMR. If you're not registered, you don't get on the DMR system. Beyond that, I hope everyone finds this useful in some way. And I'm thinking that maybe as I go further with my my new Yaesu radio, I will come out with perhaps a little bit of a tutorial to give you a little bit of the layout of that radio. My wonderful wife sat with me and read through all the buttons and things to tell me what's what. And then I could read the manual and figure out how to do what I want to do. So with that, everyone, have a great summer in amateur radio, or whatever time of the year it is when you're listening to this. It happens to be late May right now as I'm recording this. We're getting summer-like weather now here in southern Indiana. 73s, God bless. This is KA9OPL, Joe. I'm going to close this session right now and wish everyone just the best of everything. Enjoy the hobby and let's have fun with amateur radio and digital.